This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
And I just looked at him and I said, there you go. That's exactly what I'm talking about right there. Mm. You know, the first thing that comes to your mind to let me know is that you make mistakes. I know you make mistakes. The thing isn't that it isn't about your mistakes or lack of mistakes. It's how you deal with your mistakes, how you make the person in front of you understand. If you have wronged them, that you understand that wrong and you learn and build from it.
Hi guys, and welcome to Time to Talk. I'm your host, Alex Holmes, and it's a pleasure to have you here with me. If it's your first time, welcome. If it's your second, third, fourth, or gazillionth time, welcome forward. It's a pleasure to have you here for Time to Talk. On Time to Talk each week, I speak to experts in their field about how we can be more compassionate and how we can be more wholehearted and more open with ourselves and others, and what this means for mental health and the way we live today. So today is a very exciting one. Today I'm speaking with Ayman Hariri. Ayman is the CEO and co-founder of Vero. Yes, that social platform I've been speaking about since this podcast conception and its beginnings. And Vero has been a huge support all the way through this podcast's lifespan and hopefully for many more. And I value Ayman as a real mentor, and this was an amazing conversation to have with him. He's so considered, he's so thoughtful, he is earnest, and we have a very gentle conversation speaking about compassionate leadership, confronting your mistakes, superheroes, funnily enough, and what a good social media platform and company does and doesn't do. We talk about fatherhood, not my own fatherhood, but we talk about our relationship to our fathers and our upbringings. And it was just a great, lovely, wholehearted conversation. It was such an audio hug. I had a pleasure listening back to this convo. But guys, as ever, make sure you go and check out Vero. My Vero is vero.co/AlexReads, where you'll get all my book reviews and content and conversations that we have on there. And all the links are in the description for where you can find everybody in this conversation, i.e. myself and Ayman. And so have a happy Friday, and I hope you enjoy listening to this conversation. And Ayman Hariri, it's time to talk. Ayman, welcome. It's such a huge honor to have you on Time to Talk. How are you doing? How's everything going with you?
Doing well, thank you for having me.
It's not a problem at all. It's a mighty pleasure to finally have a chance to chat to you. Let's start with, how are you doing right now?
I'm in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. This is where I live, and my kids go to school, and where I have family, and I've been living here for a number of years. I'm doing well, given the circumstances. We always, you know, should say alhamdulillah, thank God, mm-hmm. for what we have. And you know, these are difficult times, I think, for everybody, with family around the world, with friends around the world, the uncertainty of it all. Mm-hmm. Really happy to see some news around a vaccine, so a light at the end of the tunnel. But remembering that we're still in the tunnel, and it's going to take a while to get out of it. But you know, I think that everybody, in their way, is going through a roller coaster of emotions and circumstances that, you know, a year ago we had no idea we'd be in. And And it's, you know, it's about, I think, you know, certainly this last period has been about, for me anyway, being thankful for the things that we have, and trying to be there as much as possible for the people around us in whichever capacity, whether emotional, whether, you know, in any way to be supportive with our loved ones around the world, you know, and reconnecting with friends that we haven't seen or heard from in a while, you know, to closest to family. So,
yeah. And I verbally said the other day in my phase of melodrama was, I don't know what the benefit of being human is right now. Tell me the benefit. I walked past a worm on the floor and I said, your life is so simple in comparison to all of the people that are going through everything they're going through here. So, yes, as you said, you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and I'm hoping that we see some change. There's so much change happening, and it's happening so quickly across the world, right? And this year, I wanted to ask about if you had a quote that you brought to the table, at all, just things that have kind of helped you kind of get through, or things that have kind of carried you to this stage, to this part of your.
Yeah. Before I get into that, I do want to comment on your, on sort of what you were saying that there about the worm and about people. And I would say, I mean, just advice, you know, sort of, this is how I kind of, yeah. I, you know, everybody has their own perspective, the perspective that I think about a lot. And when the thing that comes to mind when I heard you say that is, I would focus on the enormous potential that humans have. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, yes, there's simplicity. You know, with simplicity comes that, you know, sort of maybe lack of problems. One thinks, one imagines.
Yeah.
Everybody's got their own problems, no matter where they are in the food chain. But I think that the thing that keeps me going all the time, the thing that I focus on, is the enormous potential that is built into humanity and people. And this period, as much as it's a difficult period for everybody, it's a difficult period for everybody on the planet. It isn't a difficult period for a certain country or a certain area due to a war that may be going on, or certain circumstances, economic or otherwise. This is something that has touched all of humanity. And I think, you know, as much as it's a, it's going to be remembered as it's quite a dark time, it also has the potential to be such a reset and such a new starting point for a lot of us coming out of this, that we'll see an enormous amount of potential coming out from the most unexpected places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I wish that for everybody, just because I think, you know, this is something that's very hard, but we'll get through this as well.
Mm-hmm. We have to.
So in terms of a quote, you know, something that we say in our part of the world is, don't hate anything. You never know what good may come out of it.
Don't hate anything. You never know what good may come.
I translated it, you know, pretty directly in Arabic. So, it makes a lot more sense.
So it's a proverb. One of those.
It's
proverbs.
A proverb. It's something that sits in my head a lot, especially when you go through. We all go through difficult times. We all go through challenges, and I think focusing on, you know, on what you can do, what's in your hands and what's not in your hands. Mm-hmm. When it's not in your hands, you can't control it, and therefore don't question it, accept it, deal with it, and try to find, in some, as obscure as it may be, what good may come out of it.
When did you first hear that proverb?
You hear it when you're very young.
Yeah. What's the earliest memory though of you when you first heard it? Because I'm imagining when we get told proverbs, it's a teachable moment, isn't it? It's always a teachable moment.
It is, but this one is so on the tip of everybody's tongue that I think it. And I guess I've seen a lot, and if I wanted to. You know, you lose people in your life. You're up against challenges that, depending on the evolution in your life, at what stage you're at, from teenager to to et cetera, going forward. You deal with things in different ways. I mean, I deal with something today that. Hopefully better than I would have dealt with when I was much younger. But I think it's having a positive view, not it's important not to be positive to the point of naive. It isn't, looking for, to stick your head in the sand. There are difficult moments. There are losses that we have. There's something that we say in Islam is, you say alhamdulillah all the time. Even when somebody passes, you say it as a matter of, that they didn't suffer, or, that there's always this idea that things can be worse.
Yeah.
And so you need to remember the things that you have and how you can't let things destroy you. From within and from outside.
Yeah. How could you say it in Arabic for me? I know.
That's fine.
When people speak different languages, I don't want them to feel like a trained monkey. But could you have to say it in Arabic just so that?
لا تكرهوا شيئا لعله خير لكم.
Okay. So don't hate anything. What's the second part?
You never know what good may come out of it.
Never know. Okay. Amazing stuff. So, welcome to Time to Talk. And you are the co-founder of Vero. And anybody who has been listening properly to this podcast, you've heard me scream about this social media platform since 2018. So that's why it's such a huge, huge pleasure to have you on, and just to kind of talk to you about your thinking around Vero, and kind of what we can learn from a space like this on the internet. And so I wanted to speak to you initially, just kind of why Vero? Why is it called Vero? And why did you and your friends start this platform? What was the vision?
So Vero means truth. I was looking for a name, and we actually didn't call it anything for a long time, because we didn't want to just name it anything or come up with something silly or funny or clever or anything like that, or catchy, or that wasn't the objective. The objective always in the things that we do is to try and be as purposeful as we can, because we feel like that's a sign of respect to the people that are in front of us. When you watch a movie and you see that there's been thought and care put into the scenes, into the cinematography, into the all of that. All of the details, especially, of course, the writing and everything, but as far as the smallest details, you feel like you know, you're doing justice to the people and the time that they're spending looking at the thing that you're making. Mm-hmm. So vero means truth. And our objective from day one, as much as we kind of clumsily felt, you know, got there, certainly at the beginning, was to create a space online that had the possibility of you being yourself. We saw this thing in our friends, this behavior, on other social platforms where everybody felt like they needed to amplify certain areas of their lives that were very small in their lives otherwise. I mean, they wanted to, it was more about showing off or creating some online persona that had nothing to do with reality. We noticed our friends weren't behaving like we knew them. And we started thinking about it. We started thinking about all the different aspects of what that meant and why, and what was it about this tool? What was it about this new service, which is relatively new in you know, the grand scheme of things, presented to people, and you saw a very different behavior, and it was almost immediate. Mm-hmm. And so we attributed it to, you know, everybody getting up on stage. Like, if you had a stage for everyone, how would they react? Would they just be themselves? Probably not. You know, you hear about artists that have to create different personas for themselves, even naming them, for having to deal with either stage fright or having to be somebody other than they are in their everyday lives. Mm-hmm. And for most people, that's not something that's sustainable. And so we wanted to create something that allowed people to be comfortable to be themselves with the people that matter most to them. And for those who wanted to be, to create another persona for themselves and be public, public facing, they could do that. Mm-hmm. But there was, I almost call it like a pressure valve, where you can be yourself with your friends in a private space, just like you can in real life. If I had to be on stage all the time, if I had to be in front of a camera all the time, I'd go mad. You know, most people would.
It's a very interesting analogy that you had there, because I remember when there was a point when I want to say 2016, 17, when I was growing very weary of social media itself and getting used to building a profile in a way. I mean, one of my friends, who's in a very similar space to me anyway, said to me, "Oh, you're not the same as you are online as you are offline." Or I remember I did a podcast, a live podcast once, and I sent it to some of my friends, and they're like, "Oh yeah, the same energy you have on stage is not the same energy you have in our group chat or in a conversation in person or whatever." So then I started to really think about it. I was just like, "Am I splitting my personality in so many different ways for so many different people? Like, where does the authenticity come from? Am I being authentic? What does that look like?" And then you have this kind of crisis of identity, I guess, this crisis of presentation.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. What did you do when you challenged any of your friends, sorry, about that? Just if you did.
Not really. I didn't want it to, I mean, I think it would have come off from me as maybe insulting or something. I didn't want to go there. I actually, to a certain
extent, my friends came and told me.
I almost wanted to see what would happen. It was almost, you know, I didn't create those platforms. I didn't ask them to be on them. I wasn't sort of directing all of this. I just wanted to see where this would go, because I feel I also feel like I have this theory that people, society, as much as sometimes we'll accept something, if it doesn't work out, if it's not sustainable, we reject it. When people change an organ, for example, or implant something, mm-hmm. and it doesn't go well, the body rejects it. And I think of things and society and human beings as going through that all the time. The things are thrown our way, whether it's food, entertainment, technology, new habits. If it starts to impede on something else that we care about more, we may let it go for a while, but then after a certain point, we reject it. Yeah. And the rejection, usually, if it takes long, it's a rejection that's quite violent, at some point. And so the way I look at it, what I wanted to do, though, what we set out to do was create an alternative. Like, we felt something was wrong, and I think, even today, it doesn't matter what your feelings are or the depth of your feelings and thoughts towards social media. You know something's off.
Yeah.
But we've taken it upon ourselves to to actually create the alternative and hopefully, try to come up with a solution.
Mm, yeah. So you've now got this really this kind of burgeoning social media platform, which has, I don't know, how many downloads does it have so far on the App Store? And
Over 5 million.
Yeah. And it's ad free right about. And you can go on there, you can share things. Can you just talk about some of the things that you can share in particular? People that listen to this podcast know that I talk a lot about the book side of things and sharing the book recommendations. But what else can you share on there?
We wanted to encompass the things that people enjoy talking about in the real world. I mean, we're always looking at the real world as our guide for how people like to socialize and what a social network really looks like. We always say the greatest social network is the one that exists in the real world. This whole hijacking of the term on the online side, I still have, I don't agree that these are social networks because there's an agenda, there's another force that's sitting in between you and your interactions with others. Mm-hmm. So we are, yes, you said we're ad free, and more importantly, we're data mining free. In that we are not collecting data, behavioral data on our users that allow us to better target them or target them in any way, for that matter.
Mm-hmm. Which is what we see in shows like in The Social Experiment, kind of how, like on Netflix, just kind of how that kind of pans out. Isn't it?
Yeah, you mean Social Dilemma, yeah.
Sorry, Social Dilemma, sorry.
Yeah, maybe another one should be made for The Social Experiment as well.
Yeah, we shall see.
No, but yeah, exactly. That's what's going on there. We're looking to design something that's more built from intuition, from empathy, from a design goal of more you being satisfied with the app, the feeling around the app, the service, and then how useful it is in your life. And so coming to the kinds of things that we let people share, we of course let people share photos and videos. That's, I think, a must on the social network. I don't think I've seen other apps come and go in terms of just recommendation engines, and and they're fine. But people also want to express themselves. They may see something, and those moments in life they want to share, and that's fine. And you want to encourage that. But we wanted to go further than that, because just allowing to share photos and video makes it more about you than it. And that actually, what we found in studies have been done, is that that actually affects your mental health negatively, and it creates a kind of sadness. And I think what it is mostly is around this idea of you, again, having to create a feeling or an energy about your life that you want people to have. And the more it contrasts with your actual life, the more you feel bad about what you have, as opposed to the other way around. So allowing you to then share, like you said, a book that you may have read or want to read, recommend or don't, a song, a TV show, a movie, a restaurant, and something that you may have come across online that, that you'd like to share with others, makes it less about you and more about sharing. And so more about sharing and less about showing off.
And I guess that was kind of, that's kind of the deciphering and the distinguishing model with regards to other platforms, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there's these features exist in other places. I think the thing that we're trying to do is we're trying to simplify the experience down to for everybody to feel that it's an accessible tool for them to use with their friends and the people that are in their lives, and not just have a ton of features for the sake of features, but rather encourage a behavior that encourages them to share, gives them that feeling that with a couple of taps, they can share that awesome song that just came on the radio, or that, that song that they, that just came up in a playlist while they were in the gym, and it gave them that extra boost, and they really want to share that with everybody and make everybody feel what it is that they're feeling.
You know, it was so funny. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were just basically like, "I'm tired of Instagram. They're the app that could, I've never seen a social media platform that wants to do everything. You can TikTok, you can what did they say? You can shop on there. You can do all these different things. Sometimes just have one thing for one thing." And it's kind of interesting that you say that. You know, it's like, don't try to do everything. Just try and be really good at doing a few things, like, and then kind of get that right, and
I absolutely
suppose that builds up trust. But
and it's interesting. That's also another thing we kind of shy away from is the features. It's not a feature war that we're trying to do, and that's what you see. Like Instagram sees that, Snapchat was doing well, and so they went and they did stories, and now TikTok is doing well, and so let's add those features, and they have nothing to do with socializing. They are, they're things that require people to generate content and push that into the world. So our center of gravity that we're always respectful of is people's inherent want to socialize. And that's our, that's the center of our universe. We've seen other apps that build around a feature, a trick, something. Or I've seen other apps that want to be, or want it to be rather, the Instagram of music and the Instagram of books and the Instagram of movies and so there, the your center of gravity starts to shift from being what people want to, that people want to share the things that they experience in their lives, to, you know, we want we want this app to just be known for this one thing, which is fine, and it can work. But that was never our focus. Our focus was people and their interactions between each other.
Yeah. What do you say to kind of like the cynics and the bad press? There's always going to be some person who's going to be like, I hate this, or I don't like this, or there's always going to be somebody who's not going to necessarily be on the bandwagon. What do you say to that?
I mean, that's absolutely their right, and the world is made up of people with different tastes, and you know, we cannot go into this expecting that everybody's going to like what it is that we're doing. Mm-hmm. If that's our goal, we should have stopped a long time ago.
Yeah.
And we I think when you're creating something, you have to, I mean, this is easy to say, because when you make something, you put something of yourself in it, right? But you have to remain objective in the sense of, what is it that you're trying to achieve? You cannot get everybody to agree on one thing. Like, that's just not a possibility. And so I try not to focus on that. I try as much as possible. We all do as a team, that if we see a negative review or somebody saying something like that, we try to see if there's something to be learned from it. Maybe there's a lesson there. Maybe there's something that we need to be mindful of. But what we don't do on the other side is say to ourselves, oh, you know, who cares what this person thinks? We've got so many people who are telling us that they love us.
Yeah.
I think that that's also not the way to go. You need to be somewhere in the middle for yourself, for your own sanity to a certain extent. Like I said, when you're making something, you're putting something of yourself. And so you have to be able to handle the criticism, but you also have to be, I think, look at it from a standpoint of a responsibility. If you are a responsible person, if you're responsibly putting something out into the world, as my dad used to say, you need to have, God gave you 2 ears and one mouth. Listen more than you speak.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know, I think a few issues with regards to social media, I think a lot of people have, is to do with safety, privacy, and I think under safety will come the trolling and those kind of things. I don't know. How are you encountering all of those things? I know you said the data mining is kind of like, you're not mining people for data to kind of use it against them at some point, which is kind of like, which is the privacy stuff. But what about security and other aspects of privacy that people can expect when they join?
Yeah, this is a really interesting sort of general subject, I think, for the whole industry. I think there are certain things that we've taken for, we've just sort of grandfathered and taken for granted that are normal on the internet. And so not enough has really been done to create a rule set that prevents that from happening, rather than a whack-a-mole effort. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan, for example, of anonymous networks. Like, so many times anonymous social networks came across my desk as an investment or as a something, and okay, I utterly rejected them because it didn't matter how well they were doing at the time.
Yeah.
But it made no sense to me. I saw certain networks that you could go on and you could say whatever about somebody, and it was like a feedback box for you, you know, yeah, somebody in your life, and you wouldn't know who it was, you know, that kind of stuff. And that kind of controversy, that kind of, like, I wonder, how is it that nobody's saying, well, this doesn't exist in the real world? Like, why would that be okay online? You know, I can't go to the, like, everybody knows who I am. And if they don't, I have my ID on me. And if I don't, they can look me up. You know, I can't go into the street. Exactly. You can't go into the street and do whatever you want, you know.
Yeah.
So what is it about online that makes that okay? Mm-hmm. And what's the expectation? And then it goes into all the things that then lead to the ability and this thing called trolling. And we as a network, we don't accept it. We have people that are a dedicated team that are there for our users, that people can report behavior or posts or content, whatever, interactions to them, and they'll take action on it. We as a subscription service, yes, giving it away for free at the moment, but we plan on turning that on. We believe that that'll be one of the deterrents of, you know, people wanting to join a network just to be negative or a negative force. Mm-hmm. So our approach and what we're always thinking about is not how do we design ourselves into a, for want of a better expression, a whack-a-mole, a situation where we're dealing with things in a whack-a-mole way, but rather how do we design something better that self-manages and self-heals as society does? You don't have any real-world trolls in your life, do you, for example? No, I mean, this is the thing. It's like, you know, we don't ask ourselves that question and then demand that this thing that we've been able to rely on for hundreds of years, that we don't demand that we have the same thing online because of other subjects that confuse the conversation.
And just distract the train of thought and the line of thinking. And for me, I just feel like it's this kind of, this ability or this desire to want to be heard. And I think that's just something that's kind of like flipped on its head when we start seeing people just kind of attacking people for no reason. And, you know, the lack of critical thinking and stuff. And some people just don't want to have to do that. They're just like, you know what, let me just kind of go full steam ahead on this person and do that, and just kind of, and that's their identity online.
There's a lack of there's a lack of consequence.
Yeah,
that's the thing. It's like I don't believe in a world without consequence.
Yeah, for sure. And you said that you're going to go on to a subscription model, because it was interesting in the Social Dilemma. Somebody said that, you know, that the when you don't pay for the product, you are the product. And I found that super interesting. And I think that was the scariest part for me. I was like, oh my God, I don't have to be thought of as a product in that sense. But and that factored into your decision to kind of make it, I don't know when this will happen, but to make it a subscription based.
Oh yeah. So here's the thing. We announce subscription. So I've had quite a few. Eamon, are you crazy? Reactions from day one of this, when I, you know, whether when I left my family business and started this, and at the time there was nothing, you know, there wasn't like a prototype that I could show my family or something. It was just, you know, some design boards up on the wall. But the first thing I gave, I said, this is a subscription service. We are going to charge people. And I really did. The reason why I said that then and believed that then was I didn't want to be the guy that says, like everybody else, when asked, what's the business model, we'll figure that out later. I couldn't with a straight face say that.
Yeah.
I couldn't live with myself. Like, yeah. I don't know how many times bars of soap I would have to, like, wash my mouth out. Couldn't look anybody in the eye after that one.
You wanted to be 100% clear from the beginning.
Absolutely. I always feel like that's like the major gotcha. Come on. Mm. You're gonna do ads. That's it. But what wasn't factoring in wasn't like, oh, and we don't want to data mine and blah, blah, blah. Because ads at the time were sophisticated online. We're talking about 10 years ago. You know, when I'm not saying we started 10 years ago, but ads 10 years ago weren't as sophisticated as they are now, right? And the ad technology and the supercomputing that sits behind, computing power that sits behind, you know, everything to serve you an ad wasn't as sophisticated as it is today. But still then it felt like an intrusion of some sort. Mm-hmm. It felt like, on the one hand, saying a business model is we'll figure it out later, and then on the other hand, it's like all the things that we would have to do on the ad side that didn't feel right, didn't make sense. And I remember having, like, later on hearing the story of WhatsApp, where they had three rules: no ads, no games, no gimmicks. He had it on a post-it note in his office on his desk, like, forever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I looked at that model and I said, you know, that makes a lot of sense. You know, and these guys, they know what they're doing, more than anybody else on the internet. And they were going to charge a subscription, mm-hmm, after a first year of use, but then they got bought out that never happened. And so, so we have been behaving from day one that we are a subscription service, and that we are giving our subscription away for free to the people who are joining us today for life. So it's free for life for anybody who joins us, mm-hmm, not as a gimmick as well, because we hate gimmicks, but rather as a thank you for giving us your time, for giving us your trust, for giving us any kind of feedback, helping us build this thing. Can't build it without our users. Our initial users are the most important in the lifetime. You know, we plan on being here for a while. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to think that if we reach 100 million users, we can go back and still look back to the 5 million that started it all for us.
Yeah.
And that we can thank them then, and it'll mean even more than us thanking them today.
Yeah.
And so we do believe in that business model because it's one that's simple. You give us X, you know, whatever we still haven't announced it, what we'd be charging a year or a month. And for that, you gain access to the service. It's as simple as that. That's the relationship. There's nothing else going on.
Yeah. And what more could you ask for from a platform, to be honest? So is there enough compassion online, do you think? Do you think people are compassionate when it comes to socials and just being denizens of the internet and just kind of people who dwell in the ones and zeros?
Well, you know, it's an awesome question and a very interesting one. I have seen, I would say first, just generally in the world, what needs to happen less, I think, is people judging each other. I think that's the first step. I think you need to put yourself in the shoes of somebody who's judging, and try to understand why is that a reaction? What is triggering that? And a lot of times I think to the fact that maybe there's something lacking in their lives, something they're not happy with in their own lives. And And that's usually the reason why, you know, when we've learned more about bullying, for example, that that's where it comes from, right? When you have somebody who is a bully, that they're probably going through something in their own lives. There's something at home. They're being bullied at home, and they're taking it out on people at school or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I think that for those who have a tendency to judge others, to ask themselves why and to deal with that rather than put other people through any kind of negative experience. And there is a lack of, I would say, empathy for others and what they go through and the nuances of their lives, rather than being quick to want to judge, even when the mistake is made, whatever it is that happens, are the circumstances. I mean, because what happens with this world or with this wheel that I saw started turning, I've seen it calm down a little bit, which is great, but this sort of online attacks that you see on somebody when they make a mistake, when they say something, is that we forget that making mistakes is what humans are about. And it isn't about the mistakes that they make, because even God doesn't expect us to be flawless, but it's what we do, how we learn from our mistakes and how we create, as I was saying earlier on, that infinite potential of learning and building and rising up and becoming better versions of ourselves, rather than attempting to live a perfect life, because a perfect life is, if it really is one without mistakes, is one without any trial, without any error, without any risk taking, without any attempt to go outside of your comfort zone and attempt to do anything. You know, another expression I learned when I was a kid: if you don't want to make mistakes, you can't work, you can't do business, you can't work and not make mistakes. Better to just stay in your bed, even stay under your bed, you know, like be as sheltered and away from the world as possible. And I think when I see what's going on online, when I see all of this, the activity that I see is that there is this jumping to wanting to say that somebody else is wrong, to show how great they are, to show how flawless they are. And that kind of, you know, I've heard it called virtue signaling, is very, very, I think that's not good for society, I think, as a whole. I think, there does need to be more compassion. But compassion to me it's sort of, the other things are the prerequisite. Stop judging. Be more empathetic, and compassion comes as a result of that, because you realize your own flaws and you are therefore open to, you know, and you enter with humility into any kind of relationship or interaction or action or things that you want to do. Even if you're trying to change the world, enter it with humility. Don't enter it. Like you watch the earlier interviews with Elon Musk, and he says the fact this company should not exist when he talks about Tesla. Yeah. The fact that we are here is already an impossibility. Like, we've gone beyond impossible. This should not exist.
Yeah.
And so I attribute a lot of his success in that company, because I think he entered it with that humility, not saying I'm the best, I can do this, but rather, this is a very difficult thing. I'm going to have to work really hard to make this even possibly succeed.
Have you been attacked online in any way
before? Oh, in lots of ways. Not in any way. In lots of ways. I obviously didn't enter. I don't think anybody should enter, you know, something that attacks the status quo or questions. We didn't even attack it. We just questioned it. Yeah. But you don't do that without having some expectation of, let's say, ruffling a few feathers.
Yeah.
So yes, I have, and that was and when it happens, it's not an easy thing to swallow, and to deal with. But I've had to build a resilience to it, because I'm not here for, you know, any kind of like popularity contest. If I wanted a quiet life, you don't start a social network and go up against, you know, the largest forces on this planet. You kind of, you know, and certainly if you wanted to make money, and if you wanted to do things that had a better financial return, there are lots of ways to do that than this. But we can't, but we believe too much in what it is that we're doing.
Yeah.
And it's turned from wanting to build a better product to us truly feeling like we're building a life raft for society, in a sense of having something that we believe is better, not in the sense of better, best, and greater or anything like that, but made for better reasons, I guess.
Yeah. What was growing up like for you?
What was what? Sorry.
What was growing up like for you? Because I imagine, well, for me in particular, growing up as a very empathetic child, and kind of being in situations where empathy was devoid, doesn't mean there was no empathy in my household, but just kind of experiencing the world as it was presented to me. What was growing up like for you, and kind of like, where did you learn to be this kind of empathetic and compassionate character? You grew up in business, you grew up in all of these different kind of elements, and then you've come to Vero and you're just like, all right, so this is my thing and this is kind of how we're going to do it. But what were the lessons that you learned along the way?
Yeah, so I wouldn't say I grew up in business. I grew up in a loving household. So my parents were, you know, very caring and attentive to, you know, myself, my siblings, and created a family environment. And we grew up in Saudi Arabia. And so, you know, at the time there weren't, you know, there was barely, you know, there was maybe like two or three places you would go out to a restaurant or something, you know, it wasn't like, so mostly it was family. It was being at home with family and having family lunches and dinners and having friends over once a week, you know, on the weekend when you weren't studying and doing your homework or studying for exams or things like that. And you pick up a few things from that kind of an environment. I'm sure that I, you know, would have reacted to things in a certain way when I was younger, that I learned to react differently from seeing how my parents did things or how the people around me did things, my older siblings did. And obviously the people around me who cared about me and taught me things. But the lesson that I learned from observing, I'd say that what I learned the most or what I saw the most as an observation was how people felt about my father. And you try to make sense of things. Some people try to make sense of things, and some people just sort of take it for granted or just explain things away with one sentence or whatever. But I wanted to learn. I wanted to break it down.
Yeah.
How did this happen? How exactly? What here is going on? You know, and to have an entire, like, just millions of people think of him in the way that they do, even today. I mean, he didn't employ millions of people. He wasn't like in charge of, you know, putting food on their table in that direct sense. So it had more to do, I realized, with the way he treated people, and he treated people in a way that wasn't what maybe they expected, because he was fortunate to be successful in his work. I think because of where he came from, and he came from very simple beginnings and never forgot that. And was never, you get people who become successful and they want to distance themselves as much as possible from their origins. And he wasn't that way. He was more about understanding the difficulty that people can have in their lives and helping as many people as he could. And that built a persona, a reputation that became self-sustaining. And so I remember having this overwhelming feeling a few years before he died that I was utterly running out of time, and that there was no way that my plan of observation was going to net what I wanted, that no matter how much time I'd have with him, it wouldn't be enough. And so I needed to take action. I needed to do something. So I remember writing a letter at 2 a.m. and sliding it under his door and telling him, you know, like something utterly unexpected. You are not going to be with us one day, and I would not have learned enough from you unless you decide to teach me. And his reaction he gave me was an incredible one. The first things out of his mouth when I saw him later that morning or early afternoon, I can't remember, where, well, I said, "But did you get a chance to read the letter?" And he said, "Yes." And he said, "Okay, so, you know, what do you think?" You know what? First things out of his mouth were, "You know, I do make mistakes. I am human and I do make mistakes." And I just looked at him and I said, "There you go. That's exactly what I'm talking about right there." You know, the first thing that comes to your mind to let me know is that you make mistakes. I know you make mistakes. The thing isn't that, it isn't about your mistakes or lack of mistakes. It's how you deal with your mistakes, how you make the person in front of you understand, if you have wronged them, that you understand that wrong and you learn and build from it. And that's what I want to learn. So growing up, I had this incredible person in my life, and this incredible person in a lot of people's lives, he was my dad. This person that I could just, you know, I used to playingly, even though I was married, I'd sit on his lap and give him a hug, you know, and go, "Yeah, I'm still your kid, you know, just remember that." And you know, I got to learn from him. I got to learn from my mother, who was extremely caring about a lot of people and open foundations for people. And, you know, just there's a big part of my father's life, and that compassionate hand out into the world, you know, was a lot of it came from her. And so I had these two people in my life that I learned a lot of this from. And, I try as much as possible in my daily, when I'm faced with something, no matter how trivial or daily it may be, to try and always, you know, make people understand that I am listening, that I'm here, and yeah. I'll try to do the right thing, whatever that may be. And there may be a mistake, it may be the wrong way. It's certainly, you know, none of us are without flaws, but we try to do the best every day. And I think as a team, that is starting to, there's a culture that's being built in Vero and the things that I'm doing to push that idea through.
We are but a sum of the memories and the stories that we carry, are we not? And thank you for sharing that. But there's one thing I did want to ask you though as well, and I'm very curious about this figurine. So guys, I'm listening, if you're listening, Eamon has these these DC figurines behind him, and I know nothing about comic books, but I know Batman and I know Superman, and I know that they are DC. Who is your favorite? Who do you prefer, Batman or Superman?
Yeah, that's a really good. There are DC statues behind me. Yeah. If I just move the camera a little bit, you'll see some more. And there are Marvel. Okay. So I am not a DC or Marvel guy, but I definitely lean DC. Okay. I'll admit that. Having had to think about it in the last few years, but generally I just saw myself as, you know, somebody who loves comic books, or comic characters, these comic book characters. Funny enough, I've always associated myself. I've always associated myself, or thought of, and enjoyed Batman as a superhero, somebody who is human because he's human, and he decides to push himself to do more and do good for the world. Mm-hmm. And just my general love for comic book heroes is this idea that they have these superpowers, these abilities, and they choose to do good with them. Like, they could do anything, you know, they could like own the place basically, and they choose to help others. They choose to put themselves in harm's way, or to be selfless with the powers that they come across or are born with, or whatever it is in the story. The thing is, though, for the longest time, I started collecting comic books, early comic books, the original comic books. And I set out to buy, because I wanted a piece of history. These things have like these very important cultural significance. And I felt, yeah, you know, I'd love to be able to have like a piece of history. So could I, you know, maybe go out there and try to find like, you know, one of each, or, you know, just something from their origin. Yeah. That, because it's, you know, from every kind of perspective, like these things, these stories have survived, and as much as they've evolved, they've survived those initial story lines, right? And I wanted to I wanted to own, you know, a little piece of that and start collecting. But I never owned a single Superman book.
Okay.
And Superman was my, you know, one of my favorites. You know, growing up as a kid.
Mm.
And the reason for that is that I kept saying he's like my dad.
Yeah.
And I'm not worthy of it. You know, so Batman, as much as is a, you know, one of my favorite characters, Superman is that aspirational, like, how do you get to there? That, how do you aspire to be that good? And I never figured out why I had never figured out for the longest time why I had that feeling. And I'll move the camera over a little bit. And that picture, there's a one when my father passed away, and I came back to Riyadh for the funeral and for everything here. I went to back to my childhood home and stayed in my room, and there was a painting on this painting sitting above my wall, you know, on my wall above my bed, mm-hmm. of basically him as Superman.
Wow. So it's a caricature, like a picture.
Right, exactly. And yeah. There were lots of these. That there was this artist who passed away, God rest his soul, drew these. And this one in particular is him as Super Hariri flying over Beirut, carrying in his arms schools and universities and hospitals. And I mean, it can't be more obvious than that association yeah. that I had forgotten, utterly forgotten. And after he passed away, that's when I bought what I have now in my collection of Superman books.
Yeah.
So I do love, you know, I love something about each and every one of these characters. Those two are the ones that stick the most. On my wallpaper on my phone is Batman. My computer is Batman. I mean, I can't help myself.
You know, it's how when we identify inside, you know, because I think I was reading somewhere and it just said when you connect with a character, you meet so many different characters along the way with regards to when, you know, whether it be in comic books or in film, that you meet so many characters along the way. So it feels like you've met so many people that you connect with, and it's a place that you don't feel so alone, you know, because at least you can look at something and think, wow, that's the connection that I have. That's the connection I'm making. And that association is important.
Yeah, I think so. Really, I think it's awesome. I think it's awesome to find, you know, things along the way that inspire you, that make you think, that challenge you. And these characters certainly have a lot to give, and a lot of stories that can be made around them.
Absolutely. Well, I have really enjoyed this conversation. I feel like I was very much a mentee, just listening to the wise man.
That's very nice of you to say. I appreciate that.
Thank you for joining me on the show. And I usually say, where can people find you? But go to Vero and you'll find him there. Because what's the alternative, really?
Just under Ayman. I mean, A-Y-M-A-N.
Yep, on Vero. I'll throw that into the show notes. And I think
And thanks for the conversation. I really enjoyed it as well. I mean, it's always nice to come across somebody who isn't just consuming the world, but rather thinking through it and trying to make sense of it all and trying to see the patterns and the way people do things, but you're looking for the pattern that is the repeatable pattern that creates positivity in this world. And I appreciate that a lot. So
thank you.
Thanks for having me on the show.